Good afternoon and welcome everybody to the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation, Finance and Policy Committee for this special Friday edition. I'm State Representative Frank Hornstein, the chair. Our first item of business is going to be the call of the roll to establish a quorum. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Cagle, present. Representative Petersburg.
Present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Barr.
Barr, present.
Barr, present. Representative Bernardi. Representative Bernardi. Representative Elkins.
Present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Frederick, present. Representative Hausman.
Present.
Hausman, present. Representative Heinrich.
Present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Mason.
Mason, present.
Mason, present. Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy. Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson. Representative Olson.
Olson present.
Olson present. Representative Richardson. Representative Richardson. Representative Torkelson.
Present.
Torkelson present. Representative West.
West present.
West present. There is a quorum.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dodge. We the minutes for our meeting yesterday are still in process. We'll plan to approve those on our next meeting after this, which is Tuesday, March 2nd. Members, we have one bill before us today, and that is Representative Elkins, House File. Let's sing that right now.
1406.
Thank you. Would you like to move your bill, Representative Elkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move that House File 1306 be referred to the Public Safety Committee.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. I wanted to just let members know kind of our format for today, since this is a fairly this bill in the past, or at least versions of this bill in the past, you know, have engendered a lot of interest from committee members and the public. So just to lay out our process for today. Representative Elkins has moved his bill to public safety. We are going to have a presentation about the bill from the author. Then we'll move right into public testimony. After public testimony, we'll allow this will be the opportunity for questions from committee members. And then there are a couple of amendments that we'll consider after that. Once we consider the amendments, then we'll have final debate on the bill and as amended, perhaps, and then we'll take a final vote. And, you know, we've allotted the full committee time for this if needed, but if we end early, that there will be no further business before the committee. So with that, members, I just call on Representative Elkins to brief us on the bill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a fairly simple bill. It runs only a little over a page, and it's permissive. It allows the Metropolitan Council, Metro Transit, to institute an administrative fine policy in addition to the criminal penalties already there in the law. And the administrative citation program could be administered, or citations could be issued by both Metro Transit Police and by non-sworn personnel, as well as authorized by the council. Includes provisions that would allow the council to implement a sliding fee schedule with the penalties increasing with each incremental offense, and also sets forth an alternative resolution process that we appeals and for mediation in cases where, for example, an offender is indigent and simply just cannot pay the fines. And it's, like I said, it's permissive. There's no fiscal note because it's permissive to the council, and the council can implement this using its own budgeting authority within the revenues that it currently has. I think that this is way overdue. We talked about this subject a lot last year. I mean, I'm sure we'll have quite a bit of conversation about it today. But this bill basically strips down the discussion from last year to its bare essentials. So I think with that, Mr. Chair, I'll introduce the General Manager of Metro Transit, Wes Koistra, to provide us with an overview.
Mr. Koistra, welcome to the committee. I understand you might be having some issues with your slides, but Mr. Howe would be able to run those for you. Are you on the call?
I am on the call.
Excellent. So if you're having trouble with the slides, then
I understand that. Mr. Chair, I understand that Mr. Howe is going to be running them for me.
Yeah, good. Okay, you can proceed then, Mr. Koistra.
Great. Hold on a moment. My screen just went blank on me. I apologize. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Wes Koistra, and I serve as the General Manager for Metro Transit. And I want to thank you, Chair Hornstein, and Representative Elkin for the opportunity to talk briefly about the issues of safety on transit, and also cover the importance of the Administrative Citations Bill as a tool to provide a welcoming, safer, and a more regulated transit environment, which is important to us. Next slide, please. This should be the slide on ridership. And while this is not a presentation on transit ridership, I've included this slide to just make a couple of points about the relationship of safety and ridership. Serious crime is down on transit, but so is ridership. Prior to the pandemic, Metro Transit was providing nearly 270,000 rides each day. And while today we are providing about 80,000 to 90,000 rides each weekday. 90,000 rides, while still a lot of rides, we assume that the loss of ridership plays into the reduction of the crime rate. So we're not placing much weight on the overall 2020 crime stats. We still use crime stats to deploy safety resources, but we're not placing, again, much weight in overall crime stats this year, and I won't be speaking to those. It's just been a year like no other. And the second reason to show the ridership chart is because safety and reliability are the top two priorities of our riders. And Metro Transit is excited for the time to remove the messages that transit is for essential ride only, because we want to welcome back our riders who do not ride today. But to be successful in regaining ridership, we know we must offer a welcoming and safe service. Next slide, please. Transit safety is defined by our customers, and we are a service provider, and it is our responsibility to meet our riders' reasonable expectations. A positive customer experience is critical to transit success, and we are a public service and available to anyone who pays a fare. So we face customer expectations at Metro Transit that can be very different across the spectrum of our ridership. What may make some riders feel safe can have a different impact on other riders. But still, there are some common themes in rider expectations of a secure transit environment. We know our riders want a clean and welcoming environment with clean and welcoming trains, buses, and facilities, and they want to know what to expect. They don't want surprises, and they expect transit to be crime-free. Next slide, please. Many of our issues and challenges are community issues and challenges, and we are part of, the public space of our communities. A rise in crime in the community generally results in a rise in crime on transit. While we have many challenges with people using transit as shelter, being without a home is not a crime. As the number of people who are unsheltered rise in our region, so do the number of people who want to use transit as shelter. And I've purposely separated the reference to untreated mental illness and chemical addiction from the reference to unsheltered homelessness. Certainly, many with untreated mental illness and chemical addiction, which are often co-occurring, are homeless, but the fundamental service solutions are different. This summer, when hotel rooms and other spaces were being used to provide shelter, many who were using transit as shelter took advantage of those opportunities. Some did not. Our experience was that many individuals with severe mental illness and chemical addiction refused the shelter that they were offered. Their needs could not be met in a hotel room or in other housing without services. And as with unsheltered homelessness, having mental illness and chemical addiction is not a crime. These are diseases of the brain that require treatment and healthcare. And until strategies and resources and community strategies and resources are better aligned with these needs, transit and the communities it serve will continue to face challenges that come from failed treatment and failed service systems. While I am certainly not a clinician or an expert in treatment, prior to coming to the Metropolitan Council, I served as Assistant Commissioner of Mental Health and Chemical Dependency for the State Department of Human Services. And I can say there is no dignity for people who use transit as shelter or as a home base. There are no restrooms, no running water, no beds, no food, no health care, and no privacy. Again, these are systemic challenges that need to be addressed if we care about people and if we care about improving the transit experience. We can't provide, transit can't, is not capable of providing the treatment. It's not transit's position to provide the homes. But these are needs and service needs that are significant and growing in our communities. This really requires partnerships among social services, police jurisdictions, criminal justice systems, businesses, service advocates, and the legislature. This is true for homeless. This is also true for homeless and unsupervised youth. We need systemic solutions that prevent a revolving door through the justice system. Over the past week, I've had 3 meetings with groups and individuals who asked to discuss what can be done about safety along transit corridors. In all cases, they spoke to the systemic nature and complexity of these issues. None want solving their problems to become the problem of their neighbor, because too often we are just moving these challenges and needs around from one location to another. Next slide, please. Acknowledging that these are systemic community issues doesn't mean that Metro Transit can wait to do something about this until something else happens around us. We are committed to making transit a cleaner and more welcoming environment. Over the past 2 years, we've added cleaning staff for both our facilities and our light rail trains. Today, trains are clean at the end of every run with a deep cleaning at night. We are replacing the cloth seats of our trains with plastic seats. We are also partnering with service providers for those who are without shelter. We have partnered with our own HRA to add 160 subsidized housing units for those who are using transit as shelter. I was recently told that these units are now serving nearly 400 individuals in these settings. These are people that were using transit as shelter prior to receiving these housing supports. We're trying to improve connections with mental health and chemical addiction treatment and service providers. In one case, we reconnected an individual with severe mental illness with his family. We have invested to increase the presence, an official presence on our trains and buses. As context, we have approximately 115 routes with 800 to 900 buses and over 90 rail cars serving over 900 square miles in our region. One-time resources have been allocated to increase police hours available for patrol of light rail cars, platforms, and transit stations. Officers are being directed by Chief Rizel of our Metro Transit Police Department to spend less time in squad cars and more time on transit vehicles. Barriers have been added to buses to better protect our bus operators, and we are leveraging technology. Police officers now have body-worn cameras. We have recently completed the installation of real-time cameras on all our trains. We have added staff to better respond for texts for safety alerts. and we are using real-time cameras to improve monitoring of crime and as evidence when charges are made. But we still need to add resources to increase monitoring and realize the potential of the real-time camera technology for prevention. Currently, the council is also conducting a safety review, which will start with engaging our riders and the communities that we serve. Next slide, please. This slide lists some of the actions we have taken and are taking to improve safety, and I've already mentioned and referenced both most of these items in the previous slide. So next slide, please. Increasing official presence on transit system and establishing a more welcoming and regulated environment remain key to an improved safety, to the improved safety of our riders and an improved transit experience. Administrative citations authority would be a powerful tool toward this goal. Current law makes fare evasion a misdemeanor that can only be charged by a sworn officer with a current fine of approximately $180. As a misdemeanor, fare evasion citations must be administered by the courts. In our experiences has been that these citations are rarely prosecuted by local governments. HR 1306 would allow us to have employees who are not police officers inspect fares and issue citations. The resolution of those citations would be managed internally instead of going to the court system. We believe that the administrative citations will be an important element of our overall efforts to improve fare enforcement. And this is especially important as we continue to build light rail and bus rapid transit lines that rely on off-board payment. Currently, off-board payments occur for more than one-third of our rides. This will grow when operations of Green Line Extension, D-Line Arterial Bus Rapid Transit, B-Line Arterial Bus Rapid Transit, and future transitways begin service. But we also believe that funding administrative citations will bring a much greater official presence on our system and create a more welcoming customer experience. It will not only increase fare checks and deter fare evasion, more eyes and ears on our transit system will also deter crime and other problem behaviors. It will allow fare checks to be a less threatening experience and provide opportunities to educate people about our fares and our fare programs to connect them with the fare structure that best serves them. And it will allow us to better focus police time on police issues and police responses. It is also a fair response to fare evasion. A misdemeanor enforcement of fare evasion results in a $180 cost and a criminal record for not paying a $2 fare. This seems incredibly harsh. And think about this in comparison to a parking ticket, which is another form of penalty for not paying to use a public transportation service. We believe this harsh penalty for a relatively small offense contributes to the hesitancy to allocate limited prosecutor time to the adjudication of fare evasion citations. It is not that paying fares is unimportant. We believe a fair and a more robust system of fare enforcement consistently and equitably applied will result in notable improvements in fare compliance. Similar changes are being made at other transit agencies across the nation. So overall, administrative citations would be one important part of our broader efforts to improve transit security, perceptions of safety, and the overall customer experience. So Chair Hornstein and members, again, I just want to thank you again for your time.
You're muted, Mr. Chair.
Thanks. Sorry about that. Thank you, Mr. Koister, for that informative presentation. Representative Petersburg, I know your hand is up. I think that it would be helpful if, as I mentioned before, I'll call on you, Representative Petersburg, after we get through the other testifiers. We just have, looks like five more folks. As soon as they're done, then we'll take questions, if that's all right. Okay. So our first public testifier is beyond the agency here is Will Schroer from East Metro Strong. Mr. Schroer, welcome back to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Hornstein and Chair Hornstein, and my name is Will Schroer. I am Executive Director of East Metro Strong. We are a public-private partnership between two counties, six cities, and large employers in the eastern half of the region, including 3M and M Health Fairview. And I will take 1 second here to launch my screen share, if I may. And Mr. Chair, would you confirm that you can see me and that I'm on presentation mode?
Yeah, I can definitely see the presentation. I saw you earlier, but it was
okay,
important
very good.
We can hear you and see your presentation.
Very good. Thank you very much. We'll all get very good at this just as it's over, and we can't come too soon. I want to follow behind Mr. Koistra, the general manager, and add a little extra context. I agree with everything that he said, and but my goal here today is not to evaluate a particular approach that Metro Transit might take or anything like that, but rather to bring some context from outside the region, and hope that that is useful to members of the committee. As the chair mentioned, this subject was in front of this committee and some of the other committees last year, and my board asked what we knew about best practices around the country as they engaged with deciding whether to endorse a particular approach here in Minnesota or not. The best resource at the time was a compilation by the Transportation Research Board called Off-Board Fare Payment Using Proof of Payment Verification, echoing the same language you just heard from the general manager. This is a common and growing way of collecting fares to do it off-board so you don't slow down the boarding process, et cetera, much more efficient. And it arrived at these conclusions, the TRB research arrived at these conclusions that agencies around the country use a customer-oriented enforcement approach rather than traditional policing. They use agency-issued citations and then adjudicate those within the agency, so again, not through the courts, as the general manager described, and they inspect those fares using non-sworn officers. And those tracked pretty closely with the kinds of proposals that were being debated here last year. But as you'll notice, that research was from 2012, and my board was very interested in what might have been learned since. So they commissioned this research, and I'm pleased to share with you that it passed through a peer review process at the Transportation Research Board and was presented last month at their annual meeting. I'd like to say it was presented in Washington, but of course it was presented virtually. But I just want to emphasize and underline for you that this has been passed through a peer review process, and hope that that adds some credibility and usefulness for you as you review these results. So since 2012, a lot of agencies have added this approach to fare enforcement and having folks on transit that are other than sworn police officers. And I make this, I say non-sworn officers because sometimes the transit agencies are in fact members of the transit police department, but they're not sworn officers. And so there's a different set of terms, and I just wanna be respectful of who is sworn and not sworn and who's a member of a department and not. Thus the slightly technical language. So we researched and got in contact with all of these agencies and found that they are deploying staff other than police to perform a variety of services, including fare enforcement. And most of these places then also treat fare non-payment as a petty misdemeanor or equivalent as administrative citation or similar. And issue those themselves. The folks that we talked to emphasize that these units work closely with police, they don't replace police, and that even if their assigned function is mostly fare enforcement, they increase public safety by virtue of their presence. from among those that we those agencies on the previous slide, we then did some in-depth interviews with these folks that are listed here. And you'll notice that they are all public safety or chief of police oriented folks from those different agencies, with just one exception at the bottom there, Jeff Heinrich. We also wanted to know if we had what we might learn from local experiences. And you're probably aware that both downtown Minneapolis and downtown St. Paul have begun or have run for some time, in the case of Minneapolis, downtown ambassador programs that that deploy folks who perform a variety of services and who are not, in fact, police, but wear a certain kind of uniform. And we wanted to know what they might have to offer to this discussion as well. So I'd like to share just a little bit more with you about what we heard from those in-depth interviews. And you'll hear that they echo, I think, quite a bit of what you heard from the general manager. First, that adding non-police staff lets police focus on police. And as we spoke with chiefs of transit police, they were, of course, or I should, perhaps shouldn't say of course, but I wasn't surprised that they focused on this first. They said, look, we have a, the police have a very specific job, and to the extent that we can focus on that job, that's our first concern. Second, that the non-sworn staff act as presence and as force multipliers. Force multiplier being eyes, you know, more eyes in more places. And if you see something that, that needs police attention, then you can get the police there in a way that you couldn't have if you weren't there. And that's true even with additional use of cameras and monitoring. And then again, they deter and reduce crime simply through first their presence, and then perhaps even more importantly, and a number of people underlined this, the creation of a positive culture. And after the safety concerns and the enforcement concerns, folks underlined that they also shared in their agency's missions of providing a comfortable environment that went beyond safe, and that the non-sworn staff were very helpful for that. And this sounds like a restatement of the very first idea when we say that the non-sworn staff reduce calls to police for many purposes, but it's actually a little bit different. There are a lot of calls for assistance either by people who are having trouble or by people who are troubled by people having trouble. And if those can go to folks who are not police and to folks that police are probably able to handle it, but also trained to handle in a different way, that reduces calls to the police for non-police purposes. And then finally, though, I was cautioned that it doesn't necessarily reduce the amount of calls to police for police purposes. And I think that makes a certain amount of sense too. The lessons then from Minneapolis and St. Paul and their downtown programs very much echoed the lessons from chiefs of police in the other regions, that they work very well with the police precincts in the two downtowns. It's a collaborative relationship. No one is trying to do the other person's job, but supporting each other. And then a very strong sense that the uniform was an important part of creating the culture of safety, but that trying to look like a police officer if you were not a police officer was probably not the point either. So some finer points, and if this committee and the agency move in this direction, I think there's some expertise in our communities, which is worth picking up on. So I just wanted to briefly review for the committee some of the lessons that that my board learned during the beginning of last year, as this was taken up in this committee last year, and that since then, in some of our conversations since, and I hope that those learnings that have been helpful to us are also helpful to you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schroer. That was a very in-depth and informative presentation. We appreciate that. And like Mr. Koistra, if members have questions of Mr. Schroer, he'll be sticking around for those. Several more testifiers we have. Next up is Finn McGarity from Move Minnesota. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Hornstein and committee members. My name is Finn McGarity. I'm a community organizer with Move Minnesota. I'm a transit rider and I'm a resident of the Lindale neighborhood in South Minneapolis. Move Minnesota is a local nonprofit that works to advance sustainable and equitable transportation through advocacy, education, and community engagement. Move Minnesota is working to ensure every community has choices for getting around. We are guided by a principle to create an equitable transportation system that puts people first. It is because of that principle of equity that while we appreciate and recognize the good faith efforts to implement transit representatives and to move towards an administrative citation system, we believe that this bill does not go far enough. By creating an administrative citation system without decriminalizing fare evasion, this bill perplexingly creates two systems of justice, where one rider could receive an administrative citation for non-payment of fare, and another rider could still find themselves with a misdemeanor. In fact, we could not think of another example of a situation where the exact same action carries the potential for two wildly different consequences, depending on the whim of the enforcing party or agency. We believe that this bill leaves the door open for greater discrimination and enforcement. Metro Transit's own data already disappointingly shows racially biased enforcement of fare evasion, with Black and Native American adults 5 to 7 times more likely to be cited and arrested compared to their white peers. At a time when our government institutions and our law enforcement are working to restore the faith of the public and rebuild trust with communities of color, consistency and transparency are critical. Members of this committee and the Met Council agree, as articulated in multiple bills, hearings, and public speaking events, that the current criminalization of fare evasion is an unfair and punitive policy, and that a transit representative program to handle fare evasion through administrative citations is appropriate. We urge you to stand behind what you have said by passing a complete solution that will ensure all riders are treated equally and with dignity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hopefully you can stick around for questions as well. Our next testifier will be, Ms. Maddie Johnson from MN350.
Yes, thank you, Chair Hornstein, committee members. My name is Maddie Johnson. Is my audio working good?
Yes, we can see and hear you.
Thank you. Again, my name is Maddie Johnson. I'm a St. Paul resident, and I'm also the transportation organizer with Minnesota 350, an organization working for climate and racial justice in Minnesota. I've used transit as my primary mode of transportation for much of the past 3 years. The Minnesota 350 transportation team is a strong advocate of decriminalizing fare evasion. So we really support introducing the citations administered through transit agents. We believe this is helpful, but we are also concerned about the consequences of allowing two systems of enforcement. By leaving a misdemeanor on the table as a consequence of fare evasion, we're setting up a problematic situation for many riders. If someone is unable to pay $2 for a fare, the impact of having a fine almost 100 times this cost, and also having a misdemeanor on one's record, has the potential to have a devastating impact on someone's ability to provide for themselves and also for their family or for their family. There's so much gray area in allowing both citations and misdemeanors as consequences. Will it be based on which line or route a rider is on? Will it instead be based on the mood of the person issuing the ticket? The ambiguity here, we believe, will amplify the racial and economic disparities already present in our justice system. So introducing citations is a step in the right direction, and we really support it. But the harmful impacts will continue unless we truly decriminalize fare evasion, which in this instance would be bringing the enforcement solely to a citation while leaving the language allowing transit agents to serve this role in enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson, for your testimony. We have a couple more members of the public who have asked to testify. Our next is Amity Foster from the Twin Cities Transit Riders Union. Ms. Foster, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay? I got a new laptop, so.
Yeah, we can hear you and see you, Ms. Foster. Thank you.
So my name is Amity Foster. I'm with the Twin Cities Transit Rider Union, and up till COVID hit, I regularly took public transit. Now I take it one or two times a week, and I really miss my transit community. I had to come to the office today, and getting on the bus and train, seeing other riders made me smile. It made me laugh. It made me feel like I was back in my community. We are very glad to see movement of a bill to create administrative citations for fare evasion, and that transit rider safety is being taken seriously by the start of the creation of transit agents. We do have serious concerns about the bill still allowing for misdemeanor citations. We worry that an option for agents or officers to choose will further racial inequities in our transit system and policing. What will be the structures in place to prevent white riders from getting administrative citations and Black riders from Minneapolis getting misdemeanors? Our transit system can be one that addresses inequities by where we focus funding, how we provide safety, or it can be one that furthers those inequities and leaves people out. Creating an administrative citation is a solid step forward to a more equitable system. Fare evasion, though, should be fully decriminalized, and we really look forward to the growing opportunities around that and transit agents in the conversations about public safety and public transit. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Foster. And again, Ms. Foster will be available for questions as well from the committee. Our final testifier is Claire Pardubsky from the University of Minnesota. And Ms. Pardubsky, I understand you're graduating shortly, and congratulations.
Yes. Thank
welcome
you.
To the Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thanks. Thank you so much. My name is Claire Pardubsky, and I'm a senior undergraduate student at the University of Minnesota. Thank you all for your time and attention today briefly. So as a senior student, I'm currently residing in the Prospect Park neighborhood near campus. And before the pandemic, I was on a trajectory to go through all 4 years of my undergraduate career without needing access to a car. I took transit everywhere and used it to explore all the Twin Cities had to offer. After moving here from out of state in Iowa, it was exciting to be part of a city and access affordable, accessible transit. The U of M has a student U Pass that makes transit affordable. And it's a resource and honestly a privilege that I do miss capitalizing on today in this work from home era. So transit should feel this way for all of its users. And this bill, while well-intentioned, does not accomplish enough to decriminalize transit fare evasion, as those testifying before me have mentioned and emphasized. And it does not achieve, it does not do enough to achieve that environment of welcome and safety. The bill gets the ball rolling on a lot of really important and good things. A police force is not necessary for penalizing a nonviolent offense such as a fare evasion. And Bill HF 1306 begins to explore some of those alternatives. And I commend you for that. I think that's something to lean into. However, adding the option to penalize people with a citation instead of a misdemeanor does not remove that risk of being punished with a misdemeanor. And instead invites indiscretion and impunity for transit police to discriminate against non-white transit users. I think accessible and safe transit is something that everyone should have access to, and I've enjoyed that privilege for almost a full 3 years of my undergraduate experience. And coming from somewhere where transit wasn't accessible in Iowa, it's been life-changing. And this bill gets the ball rolling, but it does not do enough, and still perpetuates an ostracizing environment of transit police handing out excessive punishment for a trivial and innocuous offense. So I would urge you to reassess and propose a stronger bill to decriminalize this really innocuous crime. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, and congratulations on your upcoming graduation. And now, members, is there anyone else that I might have missed from the public that wishes to testify on this bill? I only have the names that I called on. I don't see anyone else. So we now have at least three member questions, and we'll move on to those. And in order of the hands, we have Representative Petersburg, Representative Hausman, and Representative Heinrich, and there's other, we have Representative Torkelson. So let's get to our questions, and you're first in line, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have two questions. One for Mr. Koistra. In earlier in your presentation, you talked about some of the emotional and mental needs and kind of social needs that these bear people will kind of encounter. Are they given information and education and how to refer them to places that they can get help, or are they just asked not to deal with it? I was unclear about that. If Mr. Koistra can answer that.
Mr. Koistra.
Yeah, Chair Hornstein and Representative Peterson. That's a great question. I think we're trying to make, we have situations where it's often co-occurring, individuals with co-occurring severe mental illness and chemical addiction. And what we're looking into now is a better connection with the mental health and chemical addictions service providers and connecting better with county social services. And we have had some success in connecting people with service, but there's not always an acceptance of that assistance from our homeless action team and from others that we have. So it's going to be really important to develop better partnerships, and really the issue becomes much more about how do we deliver services to a group of people who have such significant needs. We will do our best to connect, but we are doing our best to connect. In the end, it really requires the healthcare and service system to begin to more aggressively address the needs of this growing population.
Thank you, Mr. Koistra. Representative Petersburg, I think you had a second question.
Yeah, thank you. And to Mr. Koistra, yeah, I appreciate that. And I do think it's important that the people that we're asking to be out there have the education to know when to refer. And yes, the individual may or may not take that referral, but that's a piece. The other one gets back to just the cost and the fiscal note. And I understand that the first 2 years it's permissive in regards to the funding is probably coming from CARES dollars that are coming to the Met Council. My concern is if this program is successful, and we sure we'll have to have some tweaks to it, but if it's successful, it's going to be ongoing. And with, I believe the fiscal note said there's anticipating of hiring 24 FTEs for this, either at the end of 2 years, we're going to continue on with it, or we're going to put 24 people on unemployment. So there is going to be a kind of an ongoing cost. And I do have concerns about what this will do to Met Council's budget and the Met Council's request for funding into the future. And so I'm just concerned that we haven't really put in proper place a budgeting aspect for this into the future. And I don't know if Mr. Shedden or the author has information on that. I'd sure like to know how that financial piece is going to be worked out.
I'll defer to Mr. Koistra on that question.
Mr. Koistra.
Sure, Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg. I think you raise a good point about the issue of how to fund this. I think we have our plans for the first 2 years would be to take advantage some of the federal relief money to begin this program. You are correct that it creates a pressure in the out years, and we would of course rather have base money to start the program with. But we have needs today, and we have and we think it's important to get started with this. We think it's a critical change not only for improving the transit experience, but for improving the fair compliance and for doing it in a fair and more equitable way. So we would of course rather have a base appropriations for this, but we think it's important enough to get started now.
Representative Petersburg, did you have any additional follow-up or questions of the Met Council?
No, I think that's going to be a work in progress, and we'll see how it goes from here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you for your questions, Representative Petersburg. Next, we have Representative Hausman, followed by Representative Heinrich. Representative Hausman.
So Chair, I have two questions. I have two questions. The first is for Mr. Koister. The second could be either for Mr. Koister or the author. Who trains this new category of employee?
Mr. Koister, maybe that would be for you initially, and then if Representative Elkins wants to chime in, that would be fine as well. Mr. Koister?
Chair Hornstein and Representative Hausman, we would expect to be providing the training in-house. Training needs to cover a lot of things, and not only needs it really is a customer service focused position. It certainly needs to understand our fare structure and understand it's an issue, and it'll be a group of individuals that will need to understand how to equitably enforce fare compliance. But it'll also need to be a group of individuals that understand how our service system works, so we can provide. Assistance to customers who may not be familiar with our system. It needs to be a group of individuals that understand some of the challenges of riders who may have mental illness and chemical addiction, prevailing chemical addiction. We understand that while this seems like a simple task to check fares, it really requires an in-depth understanding of how we deliver services, is how the fare structure works, and how we deal with special populations.
And then the second question comes about by my confusion by the last testifiers, and maybe I just didn't listen to the explanation of the bill carefully, because I didn't quite see where is the possibility of two systems, that the same system is not universal. The author described a plan, an approach, and I thought that would apply to everyone, that the employee wouldn't have a choice to use one approach or another.
Representative Elkins, maybe that one would be for you, and if any of the other testifiers would want to add a comment, that's fine. But I think let's start with Representative Elkins on that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understood the question, Representative Hausman.
Well, all of the last testifiers worried that now in your bill, there are two approaches, and that the employee can choose to use one approach or the other, and in which case it won't be universally fair. And I missed the...
Okay. Thank you. No, I'm going to defer to Mr. Koister on that to speak to, you know, how the Met Council, Met Transit, Metro Transit would intend to implement this law if it's passed.
Mr. Koister.
Chair Hornstein, Representative Hausman, our intent to implement this would be that we would abandon the misdemeanor citation altogether and replace it with this. I think that I'm not sure. I think the sensitivity to making it permissive is both based upon budget considerations and based upon the other transit systems that may not want to go this direction. But as far as Metro Transit goes, if we adopt this system, if we adopt administrative citations, we're not going to implement the other. We don't view it as an option on an individual interaction basis, or an option on we'll do this on bus and we'll do this on trains, or that kind of option. We see it as an opt-in or an opt-out proposition.
Representative Elkins.
Line 3.13, the issuance of an administrative citation prevents imposition of a misdemeanor citation under subdivision one. So you certainly, no one could get both. If you're issued an administrative citation, you can't also be issued a misdemeanor charge as well.
Thank you. So this is a very helpful question, Representative Hausman. I'm glad you asked it. So just to be clear, this bill is clear on the fact that we are making a change from a misdemeanor to an administrative citation. So one would no longer be served a misdemeanor for fare evasion, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification, Representative Hausman, Representative Elkins, and Mr. Koistra. Our next questioner is Representative Heinrich, and then we'll have Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just first want to thank Mr. Koistra. I think the committee is certainly getting our money's worth out of him today. And my questions are, I think, going to be directed towards him as well. So in regards to Section 3, Paragraph E of Rep. Elkins' bill here, that section kind of establishes, or Paragraph E establishes, methods to resolve administrative citation. Alternative resolution procedure must be available to person who's committed violation under Subdivision 1, Paragraph A. First time less person demonstrates financial hardship under criteria established by the council. I was wondering if Mr. Koistra could tell me what kind of criteria is used, or if they already have a metric established for identifying financial hardship. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Koistra.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I am not aware that we have a metric developed. I'm going to invite, if I can, Mr. Chair, the Chief of Staff at Metro Transit, Leslie Condaris, if I'm missing the information. But my understanding is that we have not developed that metric yet at this point. That the language allows us to establish that metric.
Did you want Ms. Condaris to testify, Mr. Koistra?
I don't think that's necessary, I guess, at this point.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Heinrich, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Two quick ones, actually. So I'm interested in how somebody should be or could be considered for exclusion. I get maybe the fine portion, but the exclusion from community service if a financial hardship is discovered. So that's kind of one part of the question. Why does that seem, I guess, the fair or the right thing to do if a citation is issued and there is financial hardship? Why is community service could be taken off the table there? And then what is the process for, again, maybe to identify that financial hardship? Would the person that received the citation have to use transit again to go to someplace physically to prove financial hardship so that they could get out of a proposed fine? Just kind of interested in those couple questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Representative Heinrich. So I think that is also for Mr. Koistra.
Yeah.
Two questions, Chair, on financial hardship.
Chair Hornstein and Representative, I'll probably give another unsatisfying answer that this is really part of what we have to develop in developing the program. We haven't had the permissive language to work through those issues yet, and these are all part of program development. We'll be looking at how we'll be looking at how other transit properties in other regions and cities do that. I know that because there are some that are way ahead of us in terms of this change, but we haven't settled on all the exact criteria. There are excellent questions, but we just aren't there yet in terms of establishing those criteria.
Thank you, Mr. Koistra. Anything else, Representative Heinrich?
Yes, Mr. Chair, just real quick, and thank you, Mr. Koistra. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one other question. I appreciate the attempt to try to answer a couple of those questions. I'm certainly interested in those. I'll give it one more shot here with another one. Is there any data that you have, and I might have missed it, and I apologize if I did, but what is the status, I guess, between the disparity between fine collections compared to citations, or is there projected data on that? Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's my last one.
And it sounds like Representative Heinrich, once again, that's directed to Mr. Koistra.
Yeah, I'm striking out, Mr. Chair. I will say that we have... I'll tell you that the information I'm aware of, as far as if I understand the question to be how many of our citations issued actually result in adjudication, or am I missing the question?
Representative Heinrich, do you want to repeat that for Mr. Koistra?
Mr. Chair, that's correct, Mr. Koistra. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I don't have the exact ratio. I can tell you very, very few. When we looked at back at the data, it was only a handful of those citations that had been issued that had been adjudicated. And the clear message that we received from prosecutors was that this is not something that they wanted to allocate prosecutor time for. And I think that, as I mentioned in my testimony, I think there was a concern that a prosecuting a misdemeanor for a $2 fare evasion when that is simply not even close to how parking tickets are handled.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I recall from last year when we heard this, the percentage of misdemeanor charges that were actually charged and where revenue collected is very small. It was less than 10%. So the revenue impact is going to be negligible or probably positive because people will actually pay the administrative penalties where anybody was paying the misdemeanor fines.
Thank you for your questions, Representative Heinrich. We're going to move to Representative Torkelson. I don't see any additional questions, and then we'll start with our amendments. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Along those same lines for Mr. Koistra, any idea how many fines are actually issued, paid or not, were issued in recent time?
I don't have the Koistra. Number of, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, Representative Torkelson, I don't have the number of fines that were issued recently. We can get back to you with that information. I will say that during the pandemic, we have backed off fare inspection for obvious reasons. And so we would be looking back at primarily 2019 data on that. I will say, and this is in follow-up to a previous question, but also is relevant to what you're asking, that I received a note that when we looked at this last in terms of adjudication, that less than 5% of the fare citations were actually adjudicated. The revenue goes to the justice system, as I understand it, the court system, but there was hardly any revenue at all, and I'm not even sure that it would result in a loss of revenue given the expense around the court expense around processing these, given the very how few of the citations were actually adjudicated.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Torkelson or Representative Elkins, did you want to chime in, and we'll have a follow-up?
Yeah, because just from my time in local government, one of the things that I recall is that yes, most misdemeanor fines are collected by the judiciary, but one of the advantages from a local government or the Met Council of using administrative citations is that they get to retain the money.
Representative Torkelson, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, I got a couple follow-ups very quickly, Mr. Chair. First, would these non-sworn officers even be able to issue that misdemeanor fine?
Would that be for Mr. Koistra?
Whoever's got the answer.
Let's get either the author or Mr. Koistra.
Yeah, I think I know the answer to that one, is that no, only sworn officers can issue misdemeanor citations.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer. Then one more question for Mr. Koistra. And by the way, thank you, Mr. Koistra, for your very thoughtful presentation. I know you've been dealing with this issue for a long time, and you do understand how challenging it is. We heard from the university, young lady from the university, that there's low-cost passes available for university students. Are there other low-cost pass programs for those who might be unable to pay fares in full?
Mr. Chair, I know the answer to this one, too.
Okay. Well, it's always good to have the author answer. Representative Elkins.
Yes. So during my time on the Metropolitan Council, the council commenced a transit assistance program, which includes a facility for deeply discounted fares for low-income people, and the program is largely administered through the region's social service agency. So, for example, in my neck of the world in southern Hennepin County, you can enroll in the program through volunteers enlisted to assist people, which is the southern Hennepin County's largest food shelf and social service agency. And most of the other counties and the other social service agencies in the region are also able to enroll people in the transit assistance program.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Torkelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm done.
Okay. I do not see any additional hands up, so we do have three amendments to work through. Our first amendment is, let's see here, the DE1. This is a DE1 amendment to House File 1306, and I believe Representative Koznick is the author of this amendment. Representative Koznick, did you want to talk about the DE1 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I presume you can, the audio's good.
Everything's good.
Thank you, members and the committee watching, the public watching. The DE1 amendment reflects what the previous representative, Representative Tabke, and I had worked on as a bipartisan agreement that was actually even sent to the House floor, and for some political theatrics, didn't quite make it up to the House floor and got canceled that day. But I just wanted to, for the committee's benefit, go through some of the things that were talked about in that previous work that isn't included in today's bill as presented, but I think it's important for the committee to understand some different provisions that may come up if we take this through conference report, and the Senate may likely or hopefully have some of these provisions in there that I think, as was previously alluded to, I've co-signed onto this bill with Representative Elkins, because I think the issue is of critical importance for the integrity and reputation of our transit system and for a functioning transportation system across the metro. So just wanted to point out on line 1.19 to establish more clearly a code of conduct for riders that would be in helpful to be create an environment that is welcoming and safe for our riding public. In subdivision three, a couple issues that the Met Council has started to address, the placement of security cameras, a public address system at each light rail station, and a real-time active monitoring of passenger activity and potential violations that would help create an environment that is much more safe than what is currently happening today. There's a couple provisions in there with the legislative report on crime and security issues on the transit line that would help the committees understand where we would need to continue to do improvements, perhaps, or if the administrative citation seems to be working a little bit. So it would give us a guideline and its discussion point annually on that. We'll skip over to, I think it's important on line 3.5 of the amendment, the staffing complement. I think it was important to also understand that police officers and sworn police officers have a very, very important role in protecting our community and our public, and that the Metro Transit cannot reduce the staff complement of peace officers. In other words, we especially as the transit system continues to grow, but that we need to also have both transit enforcement agents, but also sworn police officers that are trained in more serious and dangerous situations. We also have down in line, starting at 3.3, transit service monitors' duties are more delineated in this amendment and are missing in the current statute. And certainly we talked a little bit, and Mr. Koistra mentioned some of the service outreach type efforts that the Metro Transit and the Council are doing. Certainly not opposed to that, but I think it's important to have that the transit agents, their duties are well delineated. And I think it was perhaps Vice Chair Cagle and I had talked about a different bill to introduce and permit service outreach groups to access our transit system to do that outreach work a little bit more directed to help people find shelters and find different care, that they would be more adequately trained on that and to allow them on the transit systems free of charge to work with both the transit enforcement agents and Metro Transit. But certainly that's not the primary goal or, excuse me, the primary duty of the enforcement agents. Another issue that the committee should be aware of that we had talked about previously was that, let's see, going to 5.3, the administrative citation penalties, it's referenced in Representative Elkins' bill, an escalating fine feature so that there is a deterrent to skipping on fare. And so it's permissive in his current language, the bill's current language. I think it would be important for the legislature to actually put it into statute. So we had suggested a $35 for the first offense, $50 for the second, and $100 for the third subsequent offense. And then more importantly, you know, some of the problems that we do have on our transit system is from repeat offenders. And so, you know, it's kind of, you get a couple strikes out here, but if someone's actually, you know, we've seen, and I don't want to over-dramatize it, but it is quite disheartening, some of the crime that we've seen on video, a lady getting round kicked in the face, a gentleman getting beat up by multiple people outside of the Target Center. More recently, there was a cleaning lady on the line that was assaulted by another woman. That if people commit a gross misdemeanor or a felony, they've lost their privilege to, at least for some period of time, to utilize our transit system, and we need to keep it safe. And so there is provisions in here. If there's a gross misdemeanor, you would lose your privileges to ride for 60 days. If there is a felony, I believe it's for a year. And then there was a little bit of talk about the fare inspection goals. I think previous testimony said that there's about from 2017 to 2018 citations issued had dropped 60% from just over 1,900 to just shy of 800 citations. And then in 2005, there was a citations reached a peak of about 2,237. I would like to wrap up by you know, just stating, you know, a couple of the things that testifiers had mentioned. But stating that there's two systems of enforcement we discussed in line 3.13 of the current bill. The administrative transit agents would only be issuing the administrative citations. But stating that there's two systems of enforcement is a little bit misinformed, because currently there is almost no enforcement of the current statute. So current statute is not being enforced very well, and it's not being prosecuted. And that's why we have this bill, to introduce another mode of citation to deter action and help clean up our transit system. And that would be the administrative citations that is in the bill. I also would like to say that, you know, the social justice lens is kind of clouding the fact that most of the victims of these crimes are people of color by proportion. And so what we're trying to do is help clean up a transit system that is utilized more proportionally by people of color. And I believe that they deserve, as much as anybody else, a safe and welcoming transit experience. And so, Representative Elkins, I appreciate you taking up this bill and continuing the work that we've done. And to the committee, I would encourage your support, even though the bill in the current sense is missing some of the things that I think are also important, but it's a good first step to improve our transit system. And so I appreciate the committee's time and Mr. Chair for allowing me to go through the previous agreement that Representative Tabke and I had, and I will at this point then remove my amendment or withdraw my amendment.
Thank you, Representative Koznick. Representative Koznick withdraws the DE1 amendment. We have a couple of more amendments, members. There's an A1 amendment. I believe that may be from Representative Torkelson, but I'm not 100% sure. Does somebody want to claim the A1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson here. I will claim the A1.
Okay, I thought it was you, but always want to make sure. Representative Torkelson, to your A1 amendment.
Well, thank you. The A1 amendment really deals with what the real issue is here, and that is security on our transit system. People don't feel safe when they're using transit, and because they don't feel safe, they're not using it as much as they could be or should be. And while I applaud Representative Elkins' bill, recognizing that the current fee system is not working, the penalty is too high, and it's just unworkable for any good purpose. Just changing to a smaller fee is not really directly addressing the issue of safety on this system. My amendment would take $2 million out of the transportation budget of the Met Council and apply it to cooperative efforts between police systems to actually secure this system. And it's not just the onboard situation, it's also the situation at the platforms. We've seen numerous crimes committed on platforms and near platforms, taking advantage of people coming off to the train or bus, and it's only going to get more difficult. I believe we have a great window of opportunity here. This point in time with COVID has reduced the number of riders on the system, allowing us to really evaluate and address safety issues on the system. We also have another line coming on the light rail system. It's been delayed again, much to my chagrin, but it has been delayed. That huge investment is going to wait probably another year before it, an additional year before it can be utilized. I believe they're stretching that out to 2024 now because of construction issues. But the point is that if that system, the largest construction project in the history of the state of Minnesota, dollar-wise, that project is a huge investment by the counties and the state and the federal government. And we want it to be useful, and we want people to use it, and they will use it if they feel safe. Safety is the prime consideration, and you're only going to have safety if you have enforcement and a group effort to identify the bad actors and keep them off the system. And that can only be accomplished by a network of law enforcement, not by just a few transit ambassadors on the car. Mr. Chair, I would stand for any questions regarding my name.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. To the A1 amendment, does the author, Representative Elkins, have a comment?
I do, Mr. Chair. So the Metro Transit Police has mutual aid agreements with all of the communities through which its transit lines preserve. And so when the other agencies need the help of the Metro Transit Police, it's provided. And when the Metro Transit Police need the help of the municipal and county peace officers in these communities, it's reciprocal. So I think that I don't see any need for the A1 amendment and would recommend that we vote no.
The author recommends a no vote. Is there additional discussion from members on this amendment?
Mr. Chair, just a final comment from the author of the amendment, if I may.
Absolutely, Representative Torkelson.
Well, the point is that those efforts are not working. They haven't been working for a long time. We need to make a more serious investment into these enforcement efforts, and that's exactly what this amendment does. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, is there any additional discussion to the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would request a roll call on the amendment.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson requests a roll call. I see no further discussion. So Mr. Dodge will take the roll. And again, the author is recommending it.
Frank, Representative Murphy's waving at you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did not even see her. I apologize. Representative Murphy.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, could you explain, is the Metropolitan Council where the money, $2 million would come from? Is there, they have a special account that the 200 or the $2 million comes from? Do they publish a accountability study of how their money is spent?
I think I can, Representative Murphy, thank you for that question. You directed that to me. I think I can answer the first question, which in my reading of the amendment, yes, the Metropolitan Council would be responsible for this allocation. Now, in terms of their reporting requirements, I cannot answer that question. And it's possible that Representative Elkins or Mr. Koister could answer that.
Yeah, Metropolitan Council's budget is subject to the review by the Legislative Coordinating Committee Subcommittee on Metropolitan Governance each year.
Okay, and
thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Murphy.
And so, Representative Elkins, and you talked about how the mutual aid agreements allow for this to happen, but taking money out of the Metropolitan Council and giving it to the Ramsey County, isn't that the bill or the idea?
Well, that's the idea of the amendment, yes.
Yes. So would Metropolitan Council still be responsible for how that money is spent by Ramsey County? Or can they direct how that $2 million would be spent by Ramsey County?
Mr. Chair, and I could leave this to Representative Torkelson to answer, but the language of the bill says the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office must coordinate with the Minneapolis Police Department, the St. Paul Police Department, and the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. So it does not say coordinate with Metro Transit Police. So it basically is taking money from the Met Council's transit reserve funds and just redistributing it to supporting other local law enforcement agencies.
There's an additional question from Representative Heinrich, and then we have another amendment after this. So members, our time is running short. Representative Heinrich.
Just a quick one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, I know last year the Met Council was sitting on a pretty sizable chunk of money. I think it was around $300 million, but I was wondering if anybody could answer if they know what is sitting in the reserves currently at Met Council. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heinrich, thank you for the question. I'm going to ask, I believe that would be appropriate for Mr. Koistra to answer, the current reserves in the Met Council budget.
Chair Hornstein and Representative, I don't have the current reserve balance on hand. I can get that to you, but I will say this, that our planning right now is to use the federal relief money to cover the lost revenues that we have to operations, and we were already facing a structural deficit at the time before the pandemic. And so the federal relief money would cover all the deficits we have in not only Metro Transit, but in Metro Mobility and all the transit services of the council through this coming biennium, the 22-23 biennium. And then after that, we face a structural deficit of about $200 million in the 24-25 biennium.
And members and Representative Heinrich and members, and this is advice to the Met Council, please sharpen your budget pencils because we're going to be going through the Met Council budget very thoroughly next week. Tentatively on Thursday, they're going to be presenting the governor's budget for the Met Council. So we'll be able to really dig in pretty deeply into this question and others, particularly the CARES money, how that's being spent, et cetera. So a good question, Representative Heinrich, and a good preview for what we want to get into next week. Members, I don't see any additional questions or comments. So Mr. Dodge will take the roll on the A1 amendment.
Chair Hornstein?
No.
Hornstein, nay. Vice Chair Cagle?
No.
Cagle, nay. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Bernardi?
No.
Bernardi, nay. Representative Elkins?
No.
Elkins, nay. Representative Frederick?
No.
Frederick, nay. Representative Hausman?
No.
Hausman, nay. Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Mason?
No.
Mason, nay. Representative Murphy?
No.
Murphy, nay. Representative Nelson?
No.
Nelson, nay. Representative Olson?
Yes.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson? Representative Richardson? Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
West, aye.
West, aye. There are 7 ayes and 9 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. The motion does not prevail. We have one final amendment, and that is the A2 amendment to House File 1306. And I believe that may also be Representative Torkelson, or is there another member that's offered?
Mr. Chair, I think I'm going to take this one.
Representative Petersburg, the A2 amendment to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to say thank you to Representative Elkins and Representative Kosnick for working on this bill and for their work last year too. This is a culmination of a lot of work. And so I appreciate that. And this bill is really kind of part of what was in the last bill that I think is missing in this one that's valuable. But first, before we get that, I have to apologize in pushing to get this amendment drafted. Line 1.19 and line 1.21, those two sections are actually the same. They're reworded a little bit differently, but they're exactly the same. So I apologize for that. And Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call on this bill amendment as well. And then I'll go on to explain it. When you start a pilot project or a new project in any case, and you know it's only going to be running for 2 years if they refund it again, you have to do some sort of analysis during that time to determine how effective it is, all the various information. And this amendment actually just adds that reporting piece to that so that the legislature is aware of it as well as the Met Council, because I believe the Met Council is going to do most of this information for themselves anyway. And it helps for the legislature to know, you know, what's going on with it as well. So just briefly, it requires that by February 15th of next year, some analysis is created. One of them is that they provide an overview of the transit safety issues and actions taken, that it provides the number of citations and how that system has worked. And then it asks for 2 different 3-year historical information in regards to what was done in the past 3 years, and followed in with just recommendations on how the system can be improved. All of that, I think, is reasonable and kind of what we would expect out of this particular bill, because what we're really interested in is what has worked and what doesn't work, and how can we make our safety on the transit system even better and being able to tweak it. So most of that's going to require some sort of legislation action in some cases, maybe not in others, but it's important for us to know that. And I think that was a part of last year's bill that was valuable and is missing in this bill. So I would certainly ask for your support for that. And I'll reiterate my request for roll call. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Roll call is requested. Representative Elkins, do you, as the author, have a recommendation and perspective on the A2 Petersburg Amendment?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. So as an 8-year member of the Metropolitan Council, I'm not seeing anything in this amendment that Metro Transit wouldn't already be collecting and providing in a report to the governing board of the Metropolitan Council. So I don't think that this is especially onerous. It basically would require Metro Transit to provide the same kind of information that they would be providing to the Metropolitan Council members themselves. So I would recommend a yes vote on this amendment.
Okay, that's helpful from the author, or yes vote recommended. Representative Kosnick, I did see your hand up. Did you still want to comment?
No, I was going to say the same as the author. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if it's going to go through unanimous, then I can take back my call for a roll call.
Okay, so there's no roll call, so this will be a voice vote.
We are able to, excuse me? Part of some technology projects, and hopefully
that
we'll have.
Okay, I thought someone was asking to be recognized. Okay, members, we'll vote on the A2 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, the motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. So, members, we are coming now. I don't see any further amendments. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Is there any further discussion? House File 1306 as amended. And I'll wait just to see if there's any hands. If not, I would then ask the author for any final comments before we take a roll call vote on the bill as amended. Representative Elkins, I don't see any other comments. Did you want to?
Just very, very briefly, I mean, to the comments of Representative Kosnick mentioned earlier, and I have to say that once again, I'm very pleased by the constructive discussion that we've had today. That's the norm here in the Transportation Committee, and I appreciate it. But, you know, as we saw in Mr. Koister's presentation, Metro Transit has actually taken steps to actually implement some of the measures that were in last year's bill, even in the absence of a legislative mandate. So in his presentation, we saw the display of the code of conduct. We talked about security cameras, crime reporting, staffing, escalating fines. And on the escalating fines, I think it's probably best to allow the Met Council and Metro Transit to experiment with an escalating fine structure to see which one works the best. And I think we saw today that that Metro Transit also has a commitment to doing everything it can to improve safety. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll just renew my motion that we refer this bill to the Public Safety Committee.
Thank you, members. So the motion before us is the Elkins motion that House File 1306 as amended be re-referred to the Public Safety and Finance Committee, Policy and Finance Committee, and the clerk will take the roll on the bill as amended. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Nay.
Barr, nay. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Kosnick, aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Mason?
Aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy?
Aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson? Representative Richardson? Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
West, aye.
West, aye. There are 15 ayes and one nay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dodge and members. We are about to adjourn exactly on time. But just before we do, just a sneak preview for next week. Some of these bills have already been posted, but I just wanted to give all the members and the public a sense of where we're headed on Tuesday. We'll be hearing House File 9, that's Representative Greenman's election bill. There are some transportation specific sections. We'll be really focusing on those sections only. Obviously it's an entire bill, so you know, members can comment on other pieces, but really our focus is going to be on the transportation sections of automatic voter registration. We're going to hear, hopefully, House File 1379, that's Representative Cagle's MnDOT policy bill, and my House File 964, which we laid over, that's the Department of Public Services policy bill. And then we have a number of bills that we may hear on Thursday, but very tentatively, we also want to give our agency friends a heads up that the MnDOT and Met Council budgets, I think we're very likely going to look at as sort of the main feature of Thursday, March 4th's bill. So with that, members, have a great weekend. Thank you for a great discussion today. And with that, our hearing for today is adjourned. Our meeting for today is